Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, so thanks for coming this morning, guys. What I would like to do, I mean, knowing that this would be a smaller session, being that it's Thursday morning, we've gotten a lot of content, haven't you drank from the fire hose? I will present some content, but my bias is to create some dialogue among us. I've been at Community Christian Church, my name is Eric Metcalf, for almost 17 years. I came as an intern when Community Christian was two locations. We were running about 700 or 800 people, and we were had just been into multi-site for 1 year. A gentleman found his way back to God, became a Christ follower, happened to be a land developer, and he was working with Dave and John Ferguson, who are co-founders of Community, thinking through facility space, like because we were growing as a church. We were looking around Naperville trying to find something, which is where we're located. It's a southwest suburb or a western suburb of Chicago, and there wasn't any property or place to put a building. And so the land developer said, well, what if we did something in Romeoville, where there's open land? And Dave and John were like, well, you know, a lot of our people are from Naperville. They're not going to go down to Romeoville. It's like 25 minutes away, 30 minutes away. And the land developer suggested, well, why don't we do it in both places? Because in his head, franchising and multi-siting or multiple locations, that was like a normal thing. They had multiple properties, all that kind of stuff. And that was like, well, why not? So they ended up building a apartment community with townhomes and houses. So it was a multi-family, multi-economic development, and built a community center in the center of it, gave that to us as a church to use, invested $100,000 of their own money in the startup, and we launched a multi-site for the first time. So we had a location in Naperville, one in Romeoville, and then we couldn't stop doing that. It was too much fun. So, and they'd always had a vision, Dave and John, from the beginning, to be a church that wouldn't just plant one church, but it would plant lots of churches. And you guys know who Dave Ferguson is. He's the president of the conference. I've worked with those guys for a long time, so they're good friends of mine. And they just kept going after that. So we ventured into a gated community of 55 and older in a neighborhood called Carillon. And they begged us to come in there. I launched the first two small groups in that neighborhood. I was 25 years old when I did that. My apprentices were 65. And that was a fun ride. That was actually incredible. Got to do that for a while. And then we launched a location in Montgomery, Illinois. A church approached us. There was like a dozen of them left. They had $6,000 in the bank account, 6 acres of land, and an old church building. And they said, could we be a campus of you guys? And we said, well, all that stuff's free, so yes, we'll do that. And so we relaunched that church with over 600 people at it. I was on the launch team for that. And it was just incredible to see that family kind of cry and give up their seats so that new people could sit down, and they had to stand in the back on launch day. And it was such a fun experience to be a part of as well. It was our first video venue. We had never done that before at that time. We had learned from North Coast, which is a multi-venue church here in California, and they were doing video venues. And we launched with a video venue. It was incredibly successful. Video absolutely works for anybody that questions it. They likely have never done it, and they haven't done it right if they did, and they didn't and wasn't successful. We then just kept launching different sites for different reasons, because we had leaders that could do it, because we had small groups that were in that neighborhood, because we had somebody on staff that wanted to go, because somebody approached us and said, hey, we have these few people. Would you consider being part of what we're doing? And so we relaunched the church as a campus. And then the last one has been us going into the city and launching the three locations in downtown Chicago, and that's where I've been for the last 3 years. I shared some of the stats to a couple of these guys. I'll just repeat them real quickly. We're about 150 people. We have two services. We launched with one. We went to a second service just this past March. We peaked out on Easter around 300. We peaked out a couple weeks ago around 250 with a big push that we did. And we're still just trying to figure things out. We're an incredibly transient campus. We're a lot different than the other campuses of Community in terms of feel and vibe, just because of where we're at and who we're reaching and all that kind of stuff. Community now is just over a dozen campuses in Chicagoland, running anywhere between 6,000 and 7,000 people on any given weekends. And that's kind of the quick version of that. And then new thing was this thing that we birthed about 10 years ago, which is our church planting network. I directed New Thing for a while. We were a handful of churches. We set a goal to double every year for the next 3 years, and we did. God showed his favor on us, and lots of fantastic things happened, and saw a lot of growth. We had about 150 churches that were part of New Thing. We've now gotten to about 300 now. We have 230 leadership residents that are in training to plant churches across the globe. India, and Philippines, and England, and all over the place. They're in training to plant new churches. We're hoping to get to 10,000 churches by 2020, and we're doing all kinds of fun stuff that is just exciting to be a part of. So I no longer direct New Thing. I work part-time with New Thing because I wanted to launch a location. I hadn't done that as the lead planter, and that's what led me into the city, and that's all of the stuff that is just coming out of my mouth right now at this given point. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to pray. And then what I'd like you to do is think about this. Think about what tensions exist in your context for multi-site. Because I'm going to ask you to just toss them out there. We're going to write them down. We're going to talk about some of those tensions. And then I'm going to present some stuff. And then we'll do some more Q&A. But let me pray. God, thank you for a chance for us to come together. Thank you, God, for all the work that you're doing in your kingdom. God, thanks for letting us come together this morning. There are some places in the world where this just couldn't happen for lots of reasons, either because of lack of money to travel or because it's not safe to come together publicly like this. God, we live in a country where the sun shines and we get the freedom of this. So I just pray to open our hearts and minds for us to hear what we need to hear and share what we need, and that this can be a collaborative environment to stretch our minds and hearts and to lead well within your kingdom. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. Out of curiosity, who here is already multi-site? Who here is already multi-site? Okay, now keep your hand up if you are two locations. Keep your hand up if you're three locations. Four locations. Okay, so there's nobody but three locations, is that right? Okay, all right. I remember those days. It's a different experience. Actually, before we were three locations, we were two locations and an off-site congregation. We hadn't yet gotten to a place where we were comfortable with calling this location a campus. And so we kind of made up some language that made us feel comfortable with it, and that was the retirement community. It was the 55 and older. Because it didn't look like our demographic, because we weren't used to reaching that demographic, and because we were more comfortable with a certain number of people showing up, like 500, like we weren't happy with this 50 or 75 people coming to this thing. And so for the longest time, we held out and didn't call it a campus. And that leader who led that offsite congregation actually reported to the campus pastor of that campus that was down the street. And it became apparent over time, it made sense that that wouldn't be an offsite congregation, instead we just called it a campus, and someone should lead that versus being reporting to somebody else and feeling like they're under the care of a ministry of a campus. We did make that shift. So I guess I'd like to hear from you, like when you think about multi-site and the things you're trying to work on and the stuff you're trying to figure out, thinking about tensions. Now, the reason why I drew this awesome picture of a rope, isn't this beautiful? Aren't you guys impressed? So, like, this rope right here, like, if it's not done right, what's the new movie that's coming out where the guy walks across a tightrope?
The Wire.
The Wire, is that what it is? By the way, I hear it has fantastic reviews. And apparently you're supposed to watch it in 3D because, like, they take you into the whole experience. Can you imagine walking across high-rise buildings? Like, supposedly it's, like, incredible. I mean, incredible. So he couldn't walk across this wire if it didn't have the right amount of tension on it. Otherwise, it becomes not a tightrope, but a trip rope. And so, like, when it comes to multi-site, we're always trying to figure out what's like on the ends of the spectrum. They seem like they're at odds at one another, but if you pull them in the right directions, both, like, at the same time, the trip rope turns into a tightrope. You can actually balance the tensions that you have within multi-site. I'll give you an example. So, like, for us, we're a reproducing church. Like, we've decided not just to be a multi-site church, but we want to be a movement church. So, like, we're not going to just kind of dabble in the idea of multi-site. We're going to keep going. So our long-term vision for Community Christian Church is to have 200 campuses across Chicago. That's our long-term vision. We have a financial model that supports that. We put money in the bank that allows us to launch the next location. We have a leadership pipeline that raises people up through the farm system that eventually they go start new locations. And that's our vision, to be a reproducing movement church. Now, the tension on the other side is excellence. If you're always sending artists and you're always sending your best leaders and you're always like, send, what's that do to the center and your experience that you oversee where you're sending people? You're potentially going to lower the bar of excellence. Your arts might go down in quality because you sent your best artist to go start that new thing. your leadership or ministries may not be quite as strong because you sent your small group leaders to go start that new thing. And so the tension in this is like, how do you keep the balance between reproducing and excellence at the same time? And we talk about that a lot as a church because we feel the tension. We're in it like thick. So what comes to mind for you? Like as you think about multi-site, whether you're venturing into the idea of it and you've thought about it yourself, or if you're two or three locations, what do you see are tensions? I'd love to hear from you guys.
One of the things we talk about a lot is how much the new site needs to be a carbon copy of the original site and how much it gets its own personality.
Yeah. So kind of the carbon copy versus new personality.
Yeah.
Is that okay language?
Sure.
That's good. Anyone else? Excuse me.
I think for us right now, we're trying to figure out the systems for which decisions are global decisions and which decisions are campus specific. Who has the power to make decisions for what situation?
So are you a global decision or are you a campus decision for you personally? What do you do?
I am married to the pastor and I listen to him.
So that would be a global decision.
Yes.
So that's the seat that you sit in primarily.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I can appreciate that. My wife would say she's this one because she's with me in our campus. So global decisions versus campus decisions. That is a real issue within multi-site.
We have it for expectations, like you said, with excellence, specifically with number of band members. So we're much smaller than the other two campuses. And so we have a day where it's just our worship leader up front. And we're in big trouble because we didn't have enough musicians. But then if we get enough musicians, my worship leader wasn't killing me because they all stink.
When you say my worship leader, what does that mean in your structure?
So I'm the campus pastor at our smallest camp. You know, we have three sites. And so we have a worship leader for our location.
Okay.
Quarter time guy.
How would you say, so excellence is on one side. What would you say is the other side?
Reality?
Yeah, I guess for us the tension is expectation of dynamic, like in the sense number of people in the room or number of size of the party, I guess, is kind of how it goes sometimes. Yeah, expectation.
I just call it excellence versus expectations. Our expectation of reality.
Yeah, excellence versus reality says it really well, I think.
Okay. Yeah?
Balancing.
We could write a book. We're going to write a book together, guys. You ready?
For us, balancing resources as opposed to dispersing based on the size.
Go on with that.
So, like, staffing resources and budgets, at what point does a larger campus in reality somewhat subsidize a smaller campus? But trying not to put too much to where they're kind of like a welfare state, but also to where the smaller campus doesn't feel neglected because they see the resources and things that are happening at larger campuses.
Yep.
That are happening because they're the larger campus and the smaller campus doesn't have
it's reality.
Yes. Yeah.
So for example, community's original site, we call it the Yellow Box. It was named by the neighborhood. If you Google Yellow Box Naperville, you'll see why. And it's about 2,500. 3,000 people, and they just got done doing a $12 million campaign for a 1,500-seat auditorium, and they got these beautiful LED screens, and it's just this gorgeous facility, and certainly some of the kind of, why did they get all the money, and why did they get all these things, and blah, 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 man, all you got to do is lift the hood on our financial model and see that Yellow Box is paying for a lot of our campuses and the way we operate as a church. And so oftentimes I'm like poking other campus pastors in the chest going, you just take a look at the financial model. You're benefiting so much from the Yellow Box. Like, they can have the best building in the world. I don't care.
Yeah.
But that is a reality that it looks that way to attenders sometimes.
Yes.
That this campus gets everything. They got a new paved parking lot. They got the best ministries. They got the coolest staff members. And we're over here just in our meager little pile of cash trying to figure things out. And we're struggling.
And it's become harder for us as we've been three campuses now. Because in people's minds, it's like they see one thing that happens at one of the campuses and one thing that happens at another campus, and then they see one thing that happens up there. So in their reality, twice as much is happening over there.
Yes.
Despite the fact they're different campuses, as totally. Opposed to what's going on at their campus.
So perception is not always reality, but yeah. One of the things in multi-site that makes it really hard is perception is reality.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't get it out of people's heads, so you're always having to, like, work through that.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating. That's a real tension.
So in your model, do local dollars stay local with the campus, or do they go into the central organization?
Local dollars stay local at the campus. We used to do the tip jar model. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with the tip jar. All the money goes in one pot. Everybody pulls out money, and somebody's deciding where that money goes,
yeah.
Where it's centrally made decisions. When we were three locations, that's how it worked. It was a tip jar model. All went to a pot, and somebody decided where it went, and I got my budget handed to me, and that's how it worked. We did that up to, like, six or nine locations. We went pretty far into that model.
It was manageable up until that point, though?
Yeah, it was mismanageable at five, at four almost. I mean, really, honestly, like the tensions, once you get to four locations, yeah. You will instantly feel the tension of multi-site.
So would you choose
in a
to
deeper
go
way.
Local from the start?
That's a very good question. I don't think so. I don't think so. Although, do you have experience in that? Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Because in my experience, like what I've seen is that you're still trying to set culture in those early stages of multi-site. You're still trying to make sure that Community Christian Church in Naperville is Community Christian Church in downtown Chicago. And part of the benefit, I call it the inhale and the exhale. So like a community will inhale to become centralized and tighten the ship and then exhale to decentralize. And it feels like we do this within seasons. It's like, inhale, oh man, like, feels like nobody's doing Community Christian Church what Community Christian Church is. And our finances, they're wrecked at every campus. What are we going to do? So we got to tighten the ship, get more centralized. Okay, now things are good.
Yeah.
Let's let everybody breathe a little bit.
So it's the idea, like, it's for now. It's probably not going to forever be this way.
That's how I would say
that.
It. And that's probably because there's lots of things that probably contribute to that for us, but I'd say one of the main things is ongoing growth and ongoing multiplication forces you to reevaluate your model almost at every turn of every season. And I'd say about every 18 months, we're just, you know, starting with something else because you're just always changing your structure and your systems. Any other tension? Yeah.
Having a clear, centralized leadership and vision versus being too sort of pastor-focused or driven by a small group.
So clear, centralized vision versus... Say that again.
Having it be too about the pastor or a small group of people, basically being too hierarchical and centralized.
Okay.
That particularly, I mean, the tension in my case has been for when that pastor steps down or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He takes the lead.
So they kind of call that a hub and spoke model. So it's like plug and play, or teaching centric, where this kind of fabulous rock star pastor is what has grown the church. And then when that fabulous rock star pastor transitions out, it kind of splinters or fragments the whole church, and they don't know what to do with it. So it's almost not reproducible. There are a number of multi-site models right now in the United States that's going to be a problem in the next generation. Sometimes better, though, just to get as much work done as you can get done while that person's there and just keep leveraging and do what you can, and then maybe the transitions will happen. That's good. I can appreciate that.
One of the tensions we dealt with was the live teacher versus video teaching, what balance to use in that, because we were kind of going back and forth.
What are you guys doing right now?
But we're not multi-site where I'm at, where I was prior. We had kind of a balance. We were about three-quarter video and about a quarter.
A quarter live?
Yeah.
How did you do that? So, like, would you teach the same big idea, the same content at all those sites?
Same content taught.
Okay.
Those weeks, but trying to develop a communicator.
Okay. All right. These are good tensions. These are all common.
We're a denominational church, so there's a tension.
What denomination?
Lutheran.
Lutheran, okay.
So there's a bit of a tension between denominational expectations and polity with things like campus pastors. And
yes.
And
they don't have to be ordained in your structure, right, if they're a campus pastor?
Well, I'm not sure we can call them campus pastors. We got to call them something else. That word pastor is like a red flag.
Okay. Okay.
In our setting says this is a seminary trained guy, person.
Yes.
So denominational expectations versus local realities of what needs to happen.
I like it. I would like to hang out with you.
Can I ask, is that ALCA or Missouri Synod or which
one? Neither one. We're a Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
That is a very common thing within denominational multi-site.
Yeah.
Very, very common thing. And you could almost have like a whole like consultation talking through that stuff. I've seen churches that have done it well and have gotten around, I hate to call them loopholes, but they figured out the loopholes and going multi-site so they can go faster. There's a gentleman named Bob Bauer who leads a church in Dyer, Indiana. The name of the church is Faith Church. If you are trying to figure those things out, I would reach out to him. He's brilliant. Has one of the largest Reformed churches of America in the United States. It's an RCA church, and they are multi-siting like nobody's business, and he's just a really smart guy. He's a really gifted man. Yeah.
Good question. With you, like, community, do you guys do just live or just video at campuses, or do you do mixes at campuses as well?
Yeah, so what I'll try to do now for our remaining time is try to address some of these tensions, and I love interaction, so keep doing what he just did. Just raise your hand, we'll stop talking and we'll answer your question and talk through what you're thinking about. So at community, so the tension of live teaching versus video, we were video venue, we had a teaching team up to three campuses that was live teaching, and the teaching team consisted of the two co-founding pastors, Dave and John Ferguson, and then a teaching pastor who we had hired who organized the content. We innovated a concept that I'm sure had been done someplace else. We just wrote a book about it faster than anybody else. It's a book called The Big Idea. And The Big Idea creative process is taking content and collaboratively coming up with teaching material and then distributing it to those that can deliver it. So this teaching team was three teaching pastors, Dave, John, and Tim. They would rotate among the three locations, and that's how it worked. When we launched our fourth location, we did not at that point want to reproduce teachers. We wanted to focus on reproducing campus pastors and campuses. So we did video to launch that site, and then the next one was video, and then the next one was video, and the next one was video. Over time, we began attracting different types of campus pastors, ones that didn't want to just lead, but also wanted to teach. And so the tension became, wow, we're getting more and more guys and gals that want to teach. How do we, like, give them opportunity as well? What would that look like? And so it was like a year and a half long conversation, maybe 2 years, because when you've been doing things for quite a while, you want to make sure you're not just flipping back and forth all the time. And it was an awesome dialogue, and we landed at a place where we wanted to develop a teaching assessment program that would apprentice people into the teaching role and then send them out to be teachers at community. So now, in our structure, we probably have about 35 different teaching pastors. However, what we try to do to keep the consistency and the experience on the weekend and to also make sure the quality is high, the campus pastor is the one who teaches. And then the people that are teaching outside of the campus pastors, oftentimes, actually they have to be, are small group leaders, their leadership within the campus. Almost look at them like they're elders, like they play significant responsibility at the campus. So if they're up front delivering the message, they're going to have authority and respect, and they're going to be great at what they're doing. And the teaching assessment process is a little bit like American Idol. So you got like five people that are listening to you, and you're delivering 20 minutes of content, and it's our content, so we call it The Big Idea, and that person passes or fails. Pass, fail, or apprenticeship, I think, are the three options. And it's a little intimidating because they're judging you based on your appearance, based on your body language, they're judging you based on the content, there's lots of things that they're assessing. And actually, probably all of us would benefit from going through something like that. And it's tough. I've done it. I did it as part of the process. And you're just like, really? Like, you're going to pick on that? That's the thing I do? Okay, you're right. I do that too much when I'm up front teaching, all that kind of stuff. So reproducing teachers. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So now it's in-person teaching. We don't use the term live teaching because the opposite of live is dead. So if you're going to use video, say in-person. But we use in-person teaching now across community at all of our locations. And
okay.
One or two times a year, we'll do what we call an all-skate. So remember all-skate? All-skate?
Yeah.
Everybody get out on the floor and skate together. We do an all-skate video once or twice a year to align the church around a conversation. So this last weekend, we did an event called Celebration Generosity, where we give away all of our offerings. That was all video teaching. And it was awesome. It was a great experience.
And that's the only time you're using video now?
That is correct.
And are you live streaming everywhere, or is it DVD?
No.
And
We were recording it and delivering it.
Yeah.
We were old school. We didn't invest in the high dollars to stream.
Is everybody in live stream?
We are dropping things on Google Drive, and then you download it.
Okay.
It's pretty easy anymore with cloud, and we use Google Drive for everything. Everything's on the drive.
You find that to be strong for reliability?
100%.
That way?
100%, yeah. It's extremely effective.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would say attention that I could see is tech needs versus budget.
Mm.
You need more resources.
You must be an architect. Is that true?
Yeah. Worship leader Adam at the site.
Yep. My arts guy spends a crap ton of money. That's the technical term.
I don't even have a budget.
You don't have a budget? That's a fail. We should have your boss in here so we can talk to him. All right. So he needs some money. Make it rain.
Yeah, I know. He's got a champagne budget.
All right, let's talk about this one. Global decisions versus campus decisions. This is a tough one right here. Decentralized versus centralized is sometimes what we call that. It's hard to know the tension in this one. It's hard to know when to go about this. It's kind of the inhale versus exhale. I feel like there's certain seasons for one versus the other. I believe that. You'll have people on staff who don't believe that. So I feel like if you could create a staff culture and have the type of people on staff who live in three different mindsets. The person who believes in alignment all the time. They think everybody should report to the right person who's in charge, and of course they think it's them, and it's centralized, and it's and commands and rules get handed down, and they think that's how it should be done. And the campus pastor's job and the campus's job is to implement the central vision. You need somebody and a group of people who believe in that. This is just my opinion. Then you want somebody who lives in the tension of both. Like, they understand the inhale, exhale. They get that there's different seasons where you need to tighten the ship, and there's other seasons where you need to release people out. That's who I am. I'm an in-betweener. I'm a hybrid guy. I believe in both. I believe in alignment, but I also believe in decentralization. Then you got guys and gals like this that are just out on the edges. They're innovating. They're paving a new way, and they understand they're part of a larger organization, but they really see themselves as innovators and creating new ways of doing multi-site, new ways of thinking through ministry, new ways of reaching people who are far from God, and they're going to live outside the box quite often. And they're going to be annoying to this person who's centralized. But if the whole team is committed to one mission of helping people find their way back to God, which is our mission statement, and if they trust each other, you can inform the whole organization and continue to grow and stretch and be meant to be as a church. That's what's happened at Community Christian Church, is that kind of balance of tensions, so that the conversation, you're always working through it, and you're continuing to grow and stretch yourselves as a church. Now, that could be just me justifying what we do at Community and saying that's what I like, because remember, I'm the middle guy. If you were to talk to the other ends of the spectrum of these people, they would tell you that, no, we're too centralized. I feel like people are always telling me what to do. I keep getting my budget handed to me, or whatever. This person may say, we're not centralized enough. You know, this campus doesn't look anything like Community Christian Church. We need to fix that problem. The more I'm being descriptive, I'm not trying to prescribe to you what you need to be about. There are a number of models that live right here, the centralized. Life Church, for example, they have dozen plus locations across the United States. They're the largest church in America. They run over 50,000 people. If you didn't know that, they're just massive. And they are a Target retail model. And that's just exactly what they do, and they do it incredibly well. You work for Life Church, you are Life Church. And Community, I would say, is probably a hybrid, because we still are aligned by the big idea. We still are aligned by our values. We're aligned by our website. We're aligned by our database. We're aligned by our mission statement and our language and our culture. There's so many things that we're aligned on. And yet, there's freedom for innovation. And then there's the looser models that are out there where they're not teaching the same big idea on any of the weekends. So just by curiosity, who here teaches a different message at different sites in your multi-site structure? Anybody? So all of you are aligned by the message. That's interesting. It's one of the first times I've seen that. That's a good model, I think, because for lots of reasons, for collaboration, for moving things forward. Any questions on alignment versus innovation? Yeah.
Are you guys still led by one elder board or leadership team?
We are.
Okay. So all of the sites still come through that government?
Yes, we have a directional leadership team that consists of Dave and John, co-founding pastors. and what we call the ABCs, Arts, Business, and Community, and that's the DLT, the Directional Leadership Team. So they lead the structure. Centrally, their role is to think a year to 5 years out. That's their primary objective. Certainly there are HR things or staffing issues or campus issues that have to percolate to where they're making big decisions, but their main objective is to think
Are they all paid staff or what about?
Yes. And then the elders are there for accountability, doctrine, discipline, and direction.
Great.
And they're not there for authority unless necessary. So it's a different kind of role, it's a different structure than many churches may function like, but we found it to be very effective.
Can you repeat the three D's, doctrine?
Doctrine, discipline, and direction. We refer to them as our leadership commission, and they are elders, and they function there for relational accountability.
Could you give an example of some of the innovations that have happened on a campus that don't necessarily take away from the distinctive of community?
Sure, yeah. I'm thinking for a second. So back in the day, we used to plan our services like from the beginning of the service experience to the very end, and that's what every campus did. The worship setting didn't change, nothing. Now, campuses have the freedom to live within all of that. And then if a campus comes up with an idea, like an arts director says, hey, we're going to have a choir this weekend, here's why we're doing it with this song, they'll share the charts with the rest of the arts directors and share it with them, this is what we're doing this week. And then other campuses will take that and they'll do it at their campus. That's kind of a micro example of innovation,
yeah,
but something like
that.
If
they wanted to. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
In the past, that would have been like a big no-no.
Okay.
And it's interesting, the guy that leads the arts right now, he's the arts catalyst for the entire church. 7 or 8 years ago, he would not have been okay with that. Like, what? That's not what we're doing this weekend. We already gave you guys the set and the order. And he wasn't mean about it, but that's just how we operated. So when we were going through the transition of, hey, so maybe, and he himself ended up innovating what we call the Big Idea Factory. And the Big Idea Factory is where all the arts directors come together, they brainstorm together, and then they kind of just pull out what would work within their particular context. As long as it's the same big idea and still communicates the message, they get to innovate what they'd like to do at their particular campus, which means their music style is going to be different at each site and so on, which I think has been really good. That's a question I thought. Yeah.
What did you mean by elders don't have authority or they're not, they use the 3D?
It wasn't a good language. Their role is relational accountability, to hold us accountable to who we say we want to be as a church. And so if they sense, they meet with Dave Ferguson, Dave chairs the elder board, they meet monthly to review each of the campus's key objectives to make sure that we're moving in the right direction. We have strategic plans as campus pastors where we develop where we'd like to go over the course of 12 months. We present those to the elders. They give us feedback on those, and then they're reviewing them every month to make sure we're making the progress we wanted to make. Things like attendance, things like strategic goals, like as far as starting new small groups. It's an incredibly helpful process. And then what happens throughout the course of the year, they'll handpick people to come in and present how they're doing. And that's a pretty cool process. I used to do that as the director of New Thing. I'd come in there and say, hey, here's what we're doing, and here's what's happening in Africa, here's what's happening here in Miami or whatever. And that was a good process. They review budgets, they do that process as well. But what I meant by that, what I was trying to say, is the ones telling us how to do it.
Right.
They don't have the kinds of experience that we probably have in ministry, so we don't give them that kind of authority. Is not the best word, but
so it's more like a policy governance kind of model, or no?
Probably, yeah. I probably wouldn't have the right language for it, quite honestly. But they're awesome. They're leaders within our church. They lead small groups. They play roles. They have to be nominated. They do a 2-year term, I think, is how long their term is, and then they rotate out. And they're not necessarily from all the campuses either. We used to try that in the beginning. We'd be like, okay, we need one from this campus and one from that campus, and so it represents the whole. It just got too complicated, especially since we're downtown, an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
It just didn't make sense.
How many campuses are you guys at now in Chicago?
13.
13.
Yeah. The other thing in decentralized versus centralized was events. Like, what do you centralize? What do you decentralize? Our leadership training, we call it leadership community. So leadership community is a strategy where you bring your leaders and volunteers together once a month to cast vision to them like this and say, hey, we're doing awesome things in Lincoln Park, and God's up to this, and let me tell you this story, and here's what where I'd like to see us go over the next 6 months. And so you cast vision, and then they break out in the ministry stuff, and they get some huddle time, and they get to talk about how they're struggling in children's ministry, and they get to talk about how they need more money for the arts, and they get to talk about how, you know, whatever. So the ministries break out. Did you get that? So I'm just teasing. So I have an arts guy, so I totally get it. And we have these conversations about money all the time. So, like, they do the breakouts, and then when they're done, they kind of take off. Now, what we used to do at community with 4, 6, 7 locations, that would come. We would come here once a month, centralized. We'd go to the original location in Naperville. We'd meet there, and that's how leadership community happened. And every month, they would hear from Dave Ferguson, the lead pastor of Community Christian Church. And that was just our routine. I and some other people who were in leadership was feeling the tension of, we as campus pastors never got the chance to do that. Mm-hmm. Because in that structure, you're coming to hear from the lead pastor, mm-hmm. Dave Ferguson. Mm-hmm. The structure that I pitched is that we don't do that every month. That we do it once, twice, at most, 3 times a year. And the rest of the time, they're meeting at my campus as the campus pastor, where I get to cast vision. I get to talk about what's happening in my neighborhood. I get to talk about what we need to do as a campus. And so we flipped that. We changed that structure several years ago now to where we come together 3 times a year, centralized, in Naperville. The rest of the time, we do it at our campuses with our people. And you can imagine the reasons for that. The more we got more, decentralized is kind of the okay word, I think, but the more we got embedded in our neighborhoods and the more we were asked campus pastors, and remember now, they're teaching now. We now do our own budgets, okay? So we have more ownership of money and more ownership of teaching. Why wouldn't we want more ownership of vision and where we're headed next and get specific about where we're particularly at? You can imagine that was like a risky move for Dave, right? It's a risky move because at that point he was Minolta. He was telling people, he was telling everybody what to believe about the company, and everybody was believing it. And now he's trusting us to do that, you know, the majority of the time with our people. And it's been really helpful to us as an organization to get more high-level leaders, higher level of ownership of campus pastors, so we can launch more and more locations throughout Chicago. Yeah.
About the centralized and decentralized reserve stuff, have you guys done like a big event, one location, all campus kind of thing, or at any point in your history, where like you do like an Easter?
Yes. Yes. Those are hard to organize. They're hard to pull off. We did an event for our 20-year anniversary. It was our 20 year. There's a big hill in Naperville. We had 8,000 people on the hill.
Okay.
We had all the arts directors perform the experience. So we had everybody represented there. We had a bit where all the campus pastors came up and it was funny. It was a good experience. We liked funny stuff. So we created a fun moment for the campus pastors. And then Dave cast a vision to the whole church. And it was awesome. It was one of the best days. We did baptisms at that.
Okay.
I think we had like 100 baptisms or something ridiculous, and we had jacuzzi set up front, and it was just a really great vibe.
That's so extremely rare, though.
Those are hard to pull off. We need to do another one because we're nearing another anniversary, so we need to figure out how to do one as a church. We're doing a generosity initiative. Don't say anything to our people yet because they don't know it. But we're doing a generosity initiative that's going to kick off in February. That will be a church-wide initiative that every campus participates in. That may or may not benefit your campus. Try doing that. We did an initiative about 7 years ago, 5 or 7 years ago, that was at all church, every campus participate, everybody had a project, and then we didn't get all the money. So imagine you were the campus that was guaranteed a project, and then you didn't get it. So we're changing our structure now. So what we're doing for this generosity initiative, you learn things in multi-site, right? We're doing the all church, one fund, whole bit, but there's only going to be 4 or 5 projects. And so if you have 13 campuses, guess what? You're going to be giving money towards projects that aren't yours. That's going to test you as a church to be, you know, are we really one church?
Yeah.
Are we really, you know, we call it hashtag family win. That's kind of our language for this. It's the one generosity, one initiative, one mission, one God, one church. I think it's going to be absolutely incredible, but it is going to require campus pastors like saying, hey, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the generosity of the church, which is true in our case. Like, community invested several $100,000 in our startup, and Lincoln Park Old Time wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that generosity of the church. Mm-hmm. So now it's our chance to give back and to invest in the next one, because we're starting another campus.
then another campus acquire a building. We're helping another one finish a build out, and we're giving away a bunch of money at the same time too, because we have partnerships that we give money to. That's fun.
One more on money.
Go ahead.
Do you guys, does each campus set aside a certain, say, percentage
yes.
that goes to the main?
Yes. We have a 10, 20, 70 model that we graduate into as a new startup. We have a 5-year window to graduate into it.
Yeah.
So it starts off at 95.5 and so on, to
you
land at 10, 20, 70. Yep. So 10, 20, 70, 10% is new initiatives. We call that our multiplier fund. We have real money, real dollars in the bank to launch the next location because we held tight to that model.
Yeah.
So 10%, 20% is central staff. You can fudge that in a kind of a fun way to make your budgets work at your campuses. But central staff, so we use a model called FTEs. You ever heard that term? Full-time equivalencies.
Yeah.
Dice up your hats, man, because it'll save you money at your campuses. So like I'm 3/4 time at my campus.
Wow.
So it saves me a chunk of change at my campus because a quarter of my FTE is somewhere else.
What do you do with the other quarter time?
Invest it back in the arts. No, I really do. So I have a full-time arts guy, and I couldn't do that if I hadn't been. You're asking me what I do with my quarter time.
Yeah.
I work for New Thing, which is our church planting network, so it falls on a different budget line item. And New Thing is still under the umbrella of community,
right.
Even though it's a separate, it's a 501c3b is what they call it. And then the 70% stays at the campus. Now, I'm going to tell you, just with complete integrity, as a person who's trying to live into this model, it's incredibly difficult. Imagine living on 70% of your budget. It's not easy. And we're actually only in the third fiscal year, so we're 85%. Is that right? We have to live on 85% of our income. As a new church in downtown Chicago, where it's less than 10% churched,
yeah.
And people don't give because they're not ready to give because they barely know Jesus. So like it's an incredibly difficult model to live into, but it frees up dollars for kingdom stuff that is pretty exceptional. So if you can figure out how to make it work, it's pretty awesome.
Are those ratios changed by either marginalized community or, in your case, Lincoln Park?
Yes.
A really high-end
okay.
community, so living there.
That's a great question. So we organize ourselves by networks. Everything we learned about multi-siting was informed to us by New Thing at one point. So New Thing is organized by networks, and I'll explain that. So each network is led by a network leader. A network leader at Community Christian Church is also a campus pastor. And in the network, we'll three to four campuses, sometimes five, because maybe one of them is actually this person. And the network is trying to balance that model. So, and I'll explain that, 10, 20, 70. Network's trying to balance that model. So this church right, or this campus right here, might actually live on 85%. This one might actually live on 65%.
Okay, so the network has to...
Make sense?
20, yeah.
So, for example, this is the yellow box. The one campus that gets everything and gets the nicest buildings and gets... They're so taken care of, I'm jealous of what they get. They actually live on less than 65% of their income. Okay? And the reason why they do is because they have a campus in their network that lives on 115%.
Yes.
And it's a campus in a community called East Aurora. It's a high Latino community. It's under-resourced. And we have chosen to go in there strategically because we want to be the kind of church that cares about that kind of stuff. And our goal is to get this campus to 100%.
Right.
You know, but they've been there for 4 years, 5 years. It just takes time for these communities that are in poverty to get to a place where they can sustain a church. It may never happen. But we're always trying to help them take the next step. So they're not living dependent upon their network. So the network model has been a win for us financially, but it's also good from a leadership standpoint too, because now what happens is these network leaders, they're giving ownership for budget, for strategic planning, for coaching. So my network leader meets with me, and we meet one-on-one. And then what happens is the network leader actually reports to what we call a movement leader, and the movement leader provides leadership to the network leaders, and they meet regularly. And they're talking through church-wide and global issues and challenges the campus pastors are facing. And then the movement leader sits on the DLT, the directional leadership team, which is the management team of the church. That's kind of a quick version of our structure.
Wow.
It's what's allowed us to continue to multi-site, keep the DNA strong, keep the relationships strong, and also
at the same time, try to develop a sustainable financial model so we can launch more and more locations.
The movement leader is not the same as the new thing director? It isn't.
Not the same thing. Not the same thing. This is actually a campus pastor in our structure.
I see.
Because people wear multiple hats in our structure. What's another tension I need to address? We have about 10 minutes. What do you guys feel like we haven't talked about?
Multi-site versus planned.
Yeah, who said that? Yeah, okay, so like the pros and cons of one another.
Yeah.
So at Community, we plant churches and we plant campuses. And the only reason why we plant a church versus a campus planter. That's the only reason. I see them as the same thing. They need to be high-capacity leaders. They have to be able to build teams. They have to be able to raise money. They have to be able to disciple people. They have to be in love with Jesus. And the only reason why somebody would plant a church versus a campus is they just want to do their own thing. And that's totally okay. We have no problem with that. So we celebrate both equally and within our context. And we throw a roaring applause. We throw chairs. It's insane. It's awesome. Our church just freaks out. And we love it. We also send in the same way. So we'll bring them up front, we'll commission their whole team, and we'll tell our church, some of you are supposed to go with them. And so the last church plant we did, we sent 50 people. We sent $50,000, and we blessed them. And now they're running almost close to 1,000 just in the last 4 years. And so we love church planting in the same way that we pull up a campus pastor and say, hey, this is their family, we're launching our next campus, some of you are supposed to be going with them. And we want you to go, because that's part of what we do as a church. We send, and we're also going to invest financially in that. Now, the difference would be the financial.
Right.
We'll put a lot more money towards a campus than we would a church plant. Although that's not always true. I mean, we've invested almost $400,000 in some church plants. And then campus startups, it's about the same, between $200,000 and $400,000. Now, our campus startups are not fully funded either. I mean, I had to raise significant dollars to move to downtown Chicago and launch a campus in a very expensive area. The Community did not pay for all that. I raised significant dollars to go with that money. And that's how we were able to launch like we did and able to do what we're doing right now. So.
You had to demonstrate capacity to raise dollars before they would send you, probably.
Because I was directing a new thing, like my networks were pretty significant.
Yeah.
And it was kind of one of those stories that we were able to tell over and over again and leverage those relationships. So we were, yeah. I was kind of a unique scenario. There's not, yeah. Moving into urban centers, like I said, they're usually between 950 grand to 1.5 million to launch churches in those areas. If you're gonna launch with 2 full-time equivalencies to 3 full-time equivalencies, pay for a space, and then salary to them so they can afford to rent. I mean, my rent on an apartment's between, I'll just give you a window, it's between 2,500 and 3,500 a month. So, like, it's different. If you've never explored urban centers, you don't know what they cost. But if you have explored them, you know they're not cheap. Manhattan costs $5,000 a month. I mean, and we have a Manhattan church plant. So you're going to plant in those areas, you have to partner with lots of organizations to do it. But if you reach those areas, oh, man, the impact you can have is significant.
Right.
Because the people that live in those areas hold tremendous influence in our country, tremendous influence.
Eric, do church plants and sites exist in the same network?
Not as much. It's harder to do that. It's harder. It's just, it gets practical, this part of the issue. So like this gentleman here, his name is Obed. Obi, that's what we call him, Obi-Wan Kenobi. So Obi is a Latino guy, and he's leading there, and he's doing a great job. But he needs to meet with his network here. So he's got meetings that he's doing, right, and budgets he's working on and coaching that he's doing. He does do some loose networking with other churches that are Latino churches. But if he was doing it like tight with both of them, he wouldn't have any time to lead his church. He'd be struggling with managing his schedule. It's just tough to live in both worlds. Any other questions or comments or things we didn't address? Carbon copy versus new personality. Who said this one? Carbon copy versus new. Okay. Did we address that for you, you think?
I think so. My question on it kind of, I guess, is it seems like for a lot of these, they sort of transition across the spectrum as you you add more and more campuses? And
seems like it.
We're all kind of at the 1-2-3 campus model.
Yep.
Have you found any best practices to help make those transitions wisely to navigate those waters well without hating anybody?
Yeah, it's tough, man, because like when you're centralized and the people that are making decisions right now may not be the same people that are going to make decisions for you in the future. That's scary. Like, that's intimidating to go through that process. Did you have a comment to that? Or?
No, I have a different question, so whenever you're done with them, I just...
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. It's not easy. It's not easy. And some people can move through the transition, and some can't. Like, our arts director moved through the transition. Dave and John, clearly, as the co-founding pastors, they have moved the church through the transitions. Honestly, you just have to ask yourself, what's the mission? The mission isn't multi-site. The mission is not how many locations you have. The mission isn't being a campus versus a church. The mission is to help people find their way back to God. So if that's the mission, then you're willing to do whatever it takes to accomplish the mission. And you start having honest dialogue about real things that really matter to work through it. So that's helped us a lot. Yeah.
Just a quick question about new site versus merging with, you said at least once.
We have two that are like that, yeah.
Is there advantage, disadvantage, lead one direction or the other? Is it just an opportunity thing when you have an opportunity to merge with a church or?
Yeah, have you read the book by, I think of his name, Jim Tarmelin? Church Merger?
Better Together?
Better Together, that's it. Have you read it?
I'm working through it.
It's an awesome book.
It is a good book.
And he's a pro at that conversation. Really smart dude. Very smart guy. At Multisite Guy, I think is his Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Just want to get free stuff from him all the time. Multisite Solutions.
Multisite Solutions.
Just brilliant guy. Love him. Love Jim. So do it if you can. It's a win-win for the kingdom. Absolutely. Living things die. The church is going to die. Your church is going to die someday. I'm sorry. Just reality. Sin entered the world. Living things die. So multiply while you can. And turn dying churches into fertilizer if you can. And they'll help things grow. So like a relaunch is awesome. If you can do it, absolutely. What you'll find most of the time, it depends upon who's leading that conversation when you talk to them. And then it also, the second thing is it depends upon who's left in the church and what influence they hold. In other words, like if you're talking to elders and the elders love the idea but the rest of the church doesn't, you're going to have a really hard time merging that church. If you're talking to the church and the church loves it but the elders don't, you're going to have a really hard time merging that church. But if you get to a place where the elders love it or the pastor, put them all in the same camp, and then the church loves it, then you have no problem. And so what we do is we hold a memorial service. We celebrate the history of that church with that church.
Do you call it a memorial service?
Basically. We do a baton passing to the new pastor. We close the doors of that church, and we reopen as a new church. And it's actually a really powerful moment. It's a very beautiful thing when it's done right. That's if the church has a history. So the second time that we did that, the church didn't have much of a history. It was kind of a floundering church plant. And they were just kind of struggling, and they were trying to figure things out, and there was one guy that was basically funding the whole thing, and he's the one that came to us, and he'd known us for a long time, and he funded the launch of the new campus, so that was pretty cool, too. little bit of a different scenario than the first one. The first one, the church was like a 105-year-old church, and there was a lot to celebrate. So it was a good experience. Yeah?
Did you guys ever have a site that became a plant, or was it a site that always stays a site?
Not yet. I mean, I think part of that is because if you have campus pastors who understand what they're a part of and they're grateful for what they're a part of, but that isn't something that they're trying to figure out is how to become an autonomous church from the larger whole, that if they ever get to the place where they feel like they need to go do that, that community is more than happy to help them be successful in that. We've had a lot of campus pastors become church planters and a lot of central staff that have become church planters. And so they know that that's like something that we cheerlead and we want to be a part of. And we not yet have found the desire or the benefit of seeing a campus become an autonomous church. But if it helps further the mission, yeah, we would absolutely get behind that. Yeah. Cool. I think we're 20 seconds away from being done. So if you have any other questions, I'll just stick around up front. Hopefully I can address any of the particular challenges that you guys have in your context. But thanks for being here. You guys are awesome.